Morning, everybody, you sexy bitches. What's happening? All right. It is Friday, the 3rd of July. Tomorrow is America's big 250th birthday. And that's a lot older than any of the people I know. I don't know about you. It's quite an achievement. I'm very excited for America. I hope that they're going to do tremendous, incredible, wonderful, amazing, unbelievable, the strongest, the bestest, the most intense, the most wild, the most fantastic of all birthdays. I think there's quite a lot to celebrate if you're American. I mentioned in my daily briefing for this morning, which if you haven't heard of this yet, you really are not paying attention. But we've been going for how many weeks now? 4 or 5, I think. And it's going well. It's going really, really well. People are loving it. We're going to ask people to start subscribing soon, but that's all going to be happening. And I said in this morning's episode, 250th birthday of America is a day that we should all celebrate because this country has made an astounding contribution to humanity. It's just been like everything from, you know, the electric light bulb to telephones to basically every, if you look around in your house or in your car or in the shops, you owe a huge amount of credit to America because as a country, they've just, you know, shut out the lights. They've been the best at all of that stuff. And I know there are lots of people who think it's very cool to beat up on America lately and, you know, but slavery, Iraq War, Obama or Clinton or Bush or whoever, or Trump. I just think, like, what a dumb argument, because this country is, it's an exciting thing for them to be celebrating 250 years of what is essentially just a, you know, it's just an experiment that's carried on for 250 years and a hell of an experiment. So happy birthday, America. Let us welcome Ben Karpinski. Hey, how's it, Ben? You're on mute for some reason. Just try and get that right. All right. There he is, buggering around with his microphone, trying to figure things out. Ben with his glasses. Oh, here he is. Okay, so we're going to talk about this. He's going, fuck. You could just see it. By the way, comment section alive and well this morning and everybody going crazy there already, which I love. Daily Briefing is quite cool, says Bitcoin Butt. I love it. I don't see a subscription option yet. What's the fee? It'll be 45 rand, which is the same as a cup of coffee. That's all. A month. And then obviously if you buy a year's subscription, we bring down the price tremendously. So you can save some money on that too. All right, are you on there, Ben? No, still not. I'm gonna let you out and let you back in. Let the producers try and figure that one out. Ben leaves the show for like 2 weeks. He goes off for 2 weeks and then doesn't know how to connect his microphone anymore. Anyway, lots of exciting stuff. We got to talk World Cup today, which is also on. I've got Ramon Cabanac joining us a little bit later on. Now, every time Ramon comes on, he says a handful of things that people go, what? And he's been a public employee for a little bit. Until John Stiernason and the DA got him fired from government. And since then, John Stiernason has kind of been fired from government. Well, he's back. He's a deputy minister now. He was demoted. So we got to talk about that as well. Try to figure out not only what he's up to, but what his opinions are. Because if you follow the guy on X, you will discover a ton of very, very interesting things. He's got wild opinions. And people love that. there are lots of... Ramon was eyeing John's pies, so he had to go, yeah, you know, I don't go out of my way to beat up on the DA because I think that everyone in South Africa does that. We apply this level of criticism to the DA, but this level of criticism to anyone else. You know, the ANC manages to wake up on time and we're like, oh, well done, guys. That's amazing. Here's the gold medal. The DA do 2 out of 10 things badly, and we're like, oh, you guys are such a failure. But I do want to say that I take a dim view of the fact that they are, like the ANC, so tolerant of people who eat too many pies in that party. I just think it's very bad look. That's all I have to say about it. No longer with the delusional alliance, says Dylan Combrink. Is that you, Dylan, or are you talking about Steenhuisen? I'm not sure. Ah, there he is. Hello, Ben.
Hi, guys. Is this better?
No, we can hear you loud and clear.
Oh, fuck, what a relief. Cliff, I didn't leave the show for 2 weeks. Now I'm incompetent. You guys just got other things in the go.
That's true. Tell me, first of all, how you're in the top 20 of the men's health cover search thing, which is quite a fucking deal, dude. Well done.
Yeah, thanks, Gareth. Thanks. I really appreciate that. It's something I really want to do to try and stay in the game. You know, being 45 in December, hey, it sneaks up on you. So this is just one of the many things to try and stay in the game, because nobody needs old people around them. People need fun people around them. They need happy people around them. No one needs my aching back. So that's me, just trying hard. And I would really, really appreciate if anyone could vote for me, because it's a voting stage thing.
Well, you know what? We actually have, thanks to J9, the producer, we have the link up here, which I'm going to put back up on the screen so that you can go and vote for Ben and help him to achieve his lifelong dream of being a beauty pageant winner. I mean, a men's health cover winner.
You've got it, Gareth. You've absolutely nailed it there. That's it. It's lifelong aspirations right here. If I get to the top 8, then I hang out with 7 Oaks that are in better shape than me and younger. And then I will just be very happy. As long as I get to in-person stuff in life, I know I can do well. It's the
the angle here is also that you can be at your best at 45. You don't have to rely on all the advantages of being in your 20s, which obviously there are, you know, youth and energy and rehab and all the things that people have. But I think it's really inspiring to a lot of people to know that you can still do that later on in life and you can achieve the same results. So fuck yeah, man. Well done. Yeah, I love it.
I mean, look, it's something, as you know, I'm very philosophical around. Like, I'm at my best now, but it's the weird thing is understanding what your best actually is. And, you know, you come into contact with various cliches during your life. And when you start to understand what your best is, life suddenly isn't like this major minefield of confusion. And it's such a cool place to be in when you can do fun things. And I just feel like it does so much for people. You know, people just take the low road and so many different things, and then they all bitch about the same things onwards. And I just don't want to be the guy who's ever bitching about stuff. I think that's the long road to what this comes down to.
Hold on, unless we're bitching about stuff on the show. I mean, that's kind of what people come for a lot of the time.
Well, that's more conversing over world affairs and matters. It's not like bitching about your girlfriend or complaining about you don't get to do fun things anymore. Like, that to me is moaning. That what we do here is just adults constructively chatting about things.
Yeah. I mean, it's just some people will say, oh, well, you know, we like to complain, but I take exception to that. I'm going to complain about that because I think that complaining, as I said on a show not so long ago, you know, the thing that people say Karens do, we need more Karens in this world. And part of the reason we need Karens is because they complain to the manager and then everybody has to behave. I feel like society has too few of those people. If you look around, I went to the shop this week and I saw you know, a whole kind of lack of application by the people in there. Apparently, we've got a bit of a shortage of Checkers 60-60 drivers because most of them are foreigners and they weren't going to work this week in case they got like lynched on their bikes. So they decided not to go to work and or to go back to, you know, Zim, Malawi, wherever they're from. So there were a lot of backlogs of orders. And then I just saw everybody else at the shop kind of, you know, dragging their feet, and you know when you go to the shop and the staff are more of an obstacle than the other customers. And trust me, the other customers get the, you know, their fair share of my ire as well. But it was they were blocking up the aisles. They were taking their time. They were kind of talking to each other at a much too loud a volume and that kind of thing. I just looked around. I thought, you need Karens in here. You need some chick with a haircut that goes like that to go to the front desk and say, hey, get these people in line. They need to get, we need more people like that. So we bitch about them, but that's what we want, actually.
Exactly. It comes back to accountability. Power and accountability. That's what we want.
Well, another thing that was in the news this week, which I don't know if you noticed, but big furore online because Jacob Zuma went to India and met with the Guptas. And he's still very much their friend. And he wants everybody to know it. He's like, no, I'll take a photo with them. Those were the good old days. He was like, he was front and center. Oh, bring me more Guptas. So clearly he doesn't feel bad.
Is that because he needs 30 million to pay back legal fees or something?
You better believe it. And he did them a solid for about a decade where they just plundered South Africa's tender process, public services. They became the chief supplier to just about everything government. They made billions and billions of dollars out of this country and then hopped, skipped, and jumped off out of where were they? In Sachsenwald. They ran from Sachsenwald to Dubai and now they're back in India. And Zuma knows they've got plenty of his ill-gotten gains and he's there to collect. I'm sure that's what it was. You know, it wasn't like he was going there for the photo op and to shake their hands and say, how's it going, Atul? I don't think he cares about those people.
No, he definitely hasn't gone all that way for the food. It's not like he's gone to have a look at the Ganges. It's a really bad business proposition that, or business agreement, because he did so much for them, but he still needs money. Although, I mean, his family, I guess, is a bottomless pit.
Oh,
he needs money for that.
One of the organizers of the March and March, which is just such a dumb name. I still can't get over it. One of them is called Jacinta something Zuma, and she is actually related to him. I was wondering. I thought, she's probably not related, you know, because someone said, oh, another Zuma, and I immediately thought, maybe she's not related. And then I checked it out, and turns out she is. Don't ask me what the, because the family, the complicated family arrangements of that particular family, you know, with the polygamy and the 8 wives and the 16 mistresses and the 3 girlfriends. Very hard to keep track of Jacob Zuma's family tree. I mean, it's more like a family hedge than it is a family tree. Hey, kitty.
Yeah, Luna's back.
Very nice. Is your cat more affectionate in winter? Because it's cold.
That's nature. It's not so much the more affectionate. She's very affectionate. It's just that she's colder in winter.
Yeah, so she pretends to like you more. That's what they do.
Yeah, she does like me. That's a voice like Gareth.
I didn't say she didn't like you. I said like you more. I want to talk about something which is slightly, it's a nuanced take on the supposed, you know, deadline that was set by these civil society initiatives, by these marches, by these people who've been dominating the TV headlines in South Africa and the news basically in this country for like over a month. And people are talking about xenophobia and they're talking about border control and they're talking about jobs and they're talking about all of this stuff. But let me ask, and it's a question I asked in this morning's daily briefing too. And I'm more interested in this than I am in how angry people are, how much opportunity they see being lost or how much it costs the state. Or I want to know, and this is a really tough question for people to answer because it means you have to dig deep. Why would someone leave Malawi, Somalia, Zimbabwe, Zambia to come to South Africa? Why would they come here? You can hazard a guess at these, Ben. This is not the complicated part, by the way. But go on.
No, I wouldn't think it is. I think all those countries literally define the shithole government, shithole country scenario where you have no opportunity, you have no choice. You can want to work and there is nothing. There is no infrastructure, there is nothing to build a life on.
Okay, quite right.
Simple as that.
So how are we different? What makes South Africa different to those countries? Because we're also a shithole country sometimes. I've said it before. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I love South Africa very much, but sometimes we are at the front of the shithole queue. It's not because of our government being fantastic that we are regarded as the place that other shithole country inhabitants want to come to. So why are we different? Why is South Africa a preference rather than Angola, for example?
Yeah, Gareth, it's one of those sticky topics, isn't it? Well,
go on.
Let's be honest. There is only one answer here, is that South Africa, for better or for worse, had many first world elements that have been kept going with people mm-hmm. who are creating infrastructures and maintaining them. So you can call that what you want, but the truth is that we still have some of those institutions and things that are working. We still have Karens that who actually want to keep things going. And it's a certain kind of people that you won't find the rest of this continent. We have functioning, we have things that still create structure in this country.
Well, go a step further, because I think, and this is where it becomes uncomfortable. And by the way, Yonder says it's not a tough question at all. And Yonder's pretty smart. He says, all those countries have nothing going. I've traveled a few of them, and in South Africa, you have a huge informal sector of jobs. The currency is higher. That's partly the thing. The real reason is we have a huge population, and a small percentage of that population is productive. So across the board, and this is not an age or a race or a culture thing, it's more of a mindset and attitude. There is a small minority of people in South Africa, and this is the big difference between us and other countries that might be worse than us, is that we have enough of those people. You know, that in those countries, they might also have a small, but they're very, very small proportion. We have slightly more than them of the productive class, the people who start businesses, who produce goods, who can do complicated and skilled services. And those people create an economy that attracts all the other people. Let's just put aside the fact that maybe they don't like their government. It has nothing to do with that. I don't think anyone sits and goes, well, the government is cuck and that's the main reason I'm going to stay or go. Of course, the government matters. But for so many of these people, it's the opportunity that South Africa might provide as opposed to, you know, Zimbabwe. So we have that small group of people, and you know, it's like 1.6 to 1.8 million South Africans pay the bulk of the income tax, right?
Yeah.
These are the same people who are on the road early every morning, going to work, getting shit done. And then we have 26 million people who are on social welfare. Those are the people who are not getting anything done. Those are the people who cost us all money. And of course, we can moan and we can complain about that, but it's almost like it's built in as a duty in any part of the world that the best producers have to look after the slaggers at the back, the ones who kind of who don't do anything. And this is where it becomes an uncomfortable thing, because you have to admit that those productive people are creating the conditions that are a magnet to people from everywhere else. And instead of Jacinta and March and March and, you know, Gayton McKenzie and a whole lot of other people going on TV or going on the radio, or going on podcasts and bitching about illegal immigrants and border control, they should be saying thank you to the productive people of this country, many of the people who listen to and watch this show, for keeping the economy going. Those people are the ones that they should be grateful to. They should get down on their fucking knees and say thank you to those people instead of being mean to the foreigners who they say are stealing our jabs. Well, there are no jabs if the productive people aren't creating those jabs. The business owners, the entrepreneurs, the people who start a small shop somewhere, the people who invent something, the people who fix a problem. Those are the people we should be grateful for instead of complaining about illegal immigrants as if they are the beginning and the end of our problem. They are not, right?
Yeah, well, it's just low-hanging fruit. I mean, there's obviously huge societal ills that come through people who sell drugs and do prostitution and crime, all that kind of stuff, but that's everywhere. And that was here before they got here. It might have expanded. But you're so right. And I think this whole productive class, which is like ultimately people have first world aspirations. They want to have nice things.
Yep.
These are people who make everything work. And they should be celebrated. It's just people just – we've got to get over the shit that we're like everyone's the same. It's not. Some people wake up at 5 to try and actually make something, and some people wake up at 9 to try and steal something. It is a universal thing. We have to celebrate the people who are the former of that combination.
Well, we've got Ramon on later on, and I'm going to ask him about this because he tweeted something today which got me thinking about several other clips that I've seen. You know, there are obviously these trends. Things go viral because people are all paying attention to the same subject. And I saw this amazing clip. I don't know if you've seen it either, Ben, but if you have, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Two separate people I follow posted about how everybody's all obsessed with the top 1 or 2%, right? They're all obsessed with Elon being a trillionaire. They're all obsessed with Ro Khanna now from the Democratic Party in the US, who's also a multi-billionaire. His kids own a bunch of golf courses, which made me think of you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's the one who's complaining about how everything's unequal in America. And, oh, it's so unfair, and how can people be poor? But, dude, your kids own two golf courses. So they're proper trust fund babies. And everybody's obsessed with that 1%. But do we spend enough time thinking about the bottom 1%? Because you know most crime in the world, right? Most crime in any measurable environment, whether it's in a neighborhood, a city, a country, almost all of the crime is committed by a tiny percentage of people who keep doing the crime. They are bad eggs. They're the kind of people who will go door to door trying to steal, as you put it earlier, who will opportunistically take advantage of women, who will break into a shop when no one's looking. They will try to blow up an ATM. They will hijack cars. It's a small number of people. It's like maybe a percent or two who are responsible for almost all the crime. And we know this because criminologists spend years at university writing papers on this stuff. How come we're so focused on the 1% who are making a huge amount of money, usually because they've solved a problem that the rest of us are happy to pay for? But we pay 0% of our time to that bottom fragment of society, the bad eggs, the ones who, if we just, I don't know, shot them, put them in jail, sent them into the middle of the Karoo with just enough water to make it for a few kilometers until they'd fall down in the sun. Why are we not obsessed with them more? Because I think we could clear up so many of our problems if we just deal with that 1% at the bottom.
Yeah, that's what the march should be. People should march and march until that's like sorted out. Because the other thing about that 1% is that it just kills the vibe for so many people. If you live around those kinds of people, and again, this is why it comes back to, it's not a race thing. It is just like, it's a productivity and it's one of those things. If you live around that 1%, they kill your vibe, right? They make your neighborhood shit. They don't.
Yes.
Like, it's just so difficult to be positive and inspired when you have to live around sotsies that are just doing this kind of stuff the whole time. So as much as it's the 1%, it really brings you down. It's like productive people look at the 1% to really bring them up. On the other side of the coin, they go, that's so smart what that guy's done there. And because of that, he's created value for society, which has now created solutions. So it's just both sides of these coins are quite like obvious. That's what always gets me. It's so obvious, but yet we can't talk about it because apparently it's offensive. Bullshit.
Well, it's, you know, it's nice to sit there and fantasize about like what you would do with Elon's money, right? And people do this. They love it because they... You feel if you could just pull the trillionaire or billionaire down to your level, then you would somehow look better.
Sorry, Gareth, just while you mention that, Elon's money, this is another thing people need to discuss. Elon doesn't have $1 trillion in a pile of banknotes in the back room. It's all tied up in company value, as in it's a value thing. So he goes from being a trillionaire to not a trillionaire because of how things get traded. People must also understand where the wealth is. This is another thing that really pisses me off. Elon's not got like, he's not earning e-bucks because he's got lots of money in his account. It's value. Value to society gives him his status.
Yeah, poor and stupid people And sometimes those do go together. I know it's also unfashionable to talk about that, but you know, the poor are not virtuous just because they have nothing. There's this weird idea that particularly a lot of feminized people, and I don't mean any ugliness towards women here, but it's a very feminine attitude to take pity on people and to ascribe to them noble characteristics and qualities which they don't have. You know, it's easy to hate the rich, but do you have the stomach to actually admit you hate the poor? And a lot of poor and stupid people believe that he's like Scrooge McDuck. He swims in a huge room full of money. He's got like gold piled everywhere. And if you took away, in inverted commas, Elon's paper money wealth, his stocks and shares, the companies he owns, the investments he's made, then first of all, if you were able to make that liquid, it would mean you'd dissolve all those companies, because if he's a majority or even a minority shareholder in some of them with that kind of wealth, he would instantly tank each of those companies. So if you took his wealth and liquidated it, we would lose Starlink, we would lose Tesla, we would lose SpaceX, we would lose X, we would lose all of those companies, because without his shareholding, they collapse, right? They owe more than they have, kind of thing. Yeah. So you collapse all those companies, plus then you distribute it. And apparently someone did the calculations the other day. Do you know what everyone on the planet would get if you were able to liquidate Elon? You know what you would get?
$12?
No, you'd get one really nice meal. So imagine your second favorite restaurant, the one that you would go to if your favorite restaurant was closed or you didn't have enough money for it. Your second favorite restaurant, that is all you would get. So if you remove Elon, of course, and that means we don't get to make massive gains in all the fields that he's made gains in. We don't get to have all the nice things, which South Africa is experiencing anyway because of stupid BEE regulations with regard to Starlink. I mean, I'd be at the front of the queue if we could have Starlink, because I think part of the reason isn't just BEE. I think it's because the current service providers in South Africa have been ripping us off for 30 years, and they just don't want everyone to know how much they're ripping us off. But we won't have that. So you get a nice meal once. You'll get one nice meal, but there is no more SpaceX, no more Tesla, no more AI from X, no more Twitter, none of that stuff. It's all gone. So well done, everybody. You really want that? Because people don't know. Again, you know, the small percentage of productive, capable, thoughtful people, whatever that percentage is, they get it. They know that this is a bad idea. But everyone else who's on the take, who's like infantilized, those people would just, give me some. I see someone who's got more than me. I want.
Mm. Yeah, it's just the poverty of the mind, eh, Gareth? That's the worst poverty of it all.
All right, so let's talk World Cup, because I'm into it, believe it or not. I mentioned last week that I'd gone to my brother's house on Monday last week to watch Argentina play. I've caught up on a couple other games. Again, kudos to America. I started the show saying 250th birthday, and you and I spoke about this a short while ago, and we said there hasn't been like the kind of excitement that we thought there might be. But I've seen some stuff online about how fans are just absolutely loving America. And I see different teams from different countries celebrating and having the most wild time in the United States. It looks like it's all caught on. Ticket sales through the roof. And the Americans do everything well, right? So we knew this wasn't going to be a disaster.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a couple of friends who have gone to games. They've all said incredibly positive things. There's amazing content going out from people doing amazing things. Yeah, it's unfortunately like everything in this world, Gareth, you've always got to dig past that second step, because that first step is just people shouting shit in life. And you'll find that it's a very successful World Cup in so many ways. And I think the time zone's obviously a bit shitty, but it is what it is. The Western Hemisphere, we have to make these allowances every now and again. That's what makes the World Cup interesting. When it goes around the world, it's a jaw everywhere. And yeah, I've been lucky enough to be, I've been to obviously the home one, and I've been to an away one in Brazil. There's something beautiful about this, whether you love football or not. When people actually are allowed just to come together, the world's not a shit place. if you give everyone a chance just to come together and have a bit of a jaw, it's funny how we forget about all the other things and stop bitching about the fact that you can't afford to go to these things. Make a plan so you can go to one in 8 years' time then. Yeah. They're wonderful things. They're wonderful things for society.
I mentioned last week that my favorite team, apart from Argentina, who actually look, again, I don't want to, you know, jinx them or jump the gun here, but they're in a pretty good group to advance all the way to the final and possibly even win it, which would be amazing. It would be just such a... I saw Messi score in the game against Austria, where he became... I think he broke the record there as well. He's got so many different accolades, this guy. And yes, you know, some people say he's not as much fun as Ronaldo, and there are lots of other soccer players who've made, you know, incredible reputations for themselves by being fantastic. But it's quite cool for Messi that he got to do this. Most goals scored in any World Cup by any individual player. And he just carries on breaking records left, right, and center. And the man is also, he's not a spring chicken by soccer, by football standards all over the world. So I was pleased to see that. But Argentina looking good. My second favorite team are Norway. Haaland.
I think it's everyone's second favorite team now. Like, there's entire bars around America that are seeing all these Norwegian guys come in and do the row thing. Like, the Oaks are rocking up the ground because they're doing it after the games. Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, there was even now at the PGA Tour last week, Victor Hovland, who's Norwegian, he was taking on Scotty Scheffler, the world number one. And so many of these Norwegian Oaks rocked up in the golf course and literally created a home vibe of their own. They were doing the rows next to the fairways. And then Victor Hovland beat him in the playoff because the actual support in Kiev was so huge.
And again, maybe this goes back to what we were saying just now about the best and the worst of humanity. I look at the way that the Japanese fans behave, and I look at the way the Norwegian fans behave. Don't tell me those cultures are not superior, because then you watch the Haiti team and you think, oh yeah, you know. Like, these are the most backward people on the planet. They're not all the same. And yeah. Norway and Japan are just, they are superior. They are superior civilizations. The people there are well-mannered. They're polite. They are tidy. They are funny. They have a nice spirit within the fan community. They just do things properly. And
Gareth, unfortunately, there is no yeah, but there. I mean, less than 100 years ago, Japan was picking up more rubble than city of Joburg because they just had the night bomb thrown on them twice. So there's no yeah, buts either. Hey? Some people and some civilizations are better. And that is the biggest truth that people just somehow want to fight against. The World Cups also show us this. It's just that.
Well, Chris, yeah, exactly. And sometimes people don't like it when these things are shown by international sporting tournaments, because you do compare apples and apples, right? Yeah. You go, well, this is a country and that's a country. But this country is awesome and that country is an absolute pile of shit. Chris Smith says, few things drive my shit like the world should be more equal. If it was all equal, I would not already be at work. Yeah.
Productive person.
I mean, you're doing the men's health thing. No one can train for you. No one can put in the work that you've put in over, you know, the last decade. Let's just say the last 10 years. No one's doing that for you. No one else can pay into a fund to help Ben improve his own health or any of the things that people have to do for their own. People understand this when it comes to their own bodies. Most people. I understand this when it comes to nutrition, again, most people. But there are really, really silly people in this world who honestly believe that you can take things from one and give them to another, and then everybody will be the same. Not going to happen.
Yeah. You know, there's something you posted on Instagram recently I thought that was very interesting. There was a guy talking about, after all the years of civilization, why is it that people have no new ideas of how to run civilization? Why do people still keep coming back with this socialism bullshit? like new ideas. We used to have cars that had wooden wheels, wooden spoke wheels, and you would crank the motherfucker up, right? Now we have cars that can go from 0 to 100 in less than 3 seconds. Now we have cars that can run on, you know, electricity. We have cars that can do a variety of things. So why do people still have ways of living that are still wooden spoke and crank? Gareth, it's like there's parts of the world, and I'm saying parts because unfortunately there's some parts that aren't like this. The parts of the world where you can't marry and have children with your sister, it's been proven that's not a good idea, okay? Let's just say that's outlawed. It's illegal because we can all guarantee right now that your sister shouldn't be your wife, okay? It's proven. We can't ignore it anymore. We can't deny it.
Sure.
The same goes for this equality socialist bullshit, okay? It's been proven. It hasn't worked anywhere. It's just fucking stupid. So can we put that as the same as marrying your sister and having kids with your sister? Why is there nuance to this conversation? There isn't. We've got to move on from there now.
I almost feel like with the audience that we have, and if you look at the comments section as a sample of that audience, I don't think there's going to be a lot of disagreement there. But we're in the minority in a place like New York, people who think like you've just explained you think. New York just elected 3, including their mayor, that would make it 4, new Congress people. Mayor obviously is just mayor of New York, he's not in Congress, but they've elected 3 new Congress people in the last week who are calling themselves democratic socialists, but they're essentially just communists. They want to abolish prisons completely. They think prisons are a bad idea. So I don't know where they want to see bad people go. Or maybe they just don't believe bad people exist. You know, they think that everything is just happy and rainbows and unicorns. Who knows? These people may be they may be very intelligent, but completely deluded, or they're really dumb. There's no other explanation. Anyway, these 3 people say no more prisons. They say no police. We don't want any police at all because obviously, police tell us what to do and we don't like that. We want to be able to, I don't know, rob and rape or what. And 2 of the 3 are women. So I don't know how they get the no policing thing, because who's going to protect them if it's not the police from bad people? And there are bad people in the world. Then they want to tax the rich at like 99%. Then they want to have free healthcare, free education. They want their college debt repaid. So in other words, you signed up to go and study a degree in sociology and you can't get a job, and now you owe that university $200,000, $300,000. And now it must be everybody else. The guy who has the electrician, the construction worker, and the plumber must pay for you to go to university. That's how they feel. And I know what you're saying, Ben, don't marry your sister is like the most obvious thing. And we've discovered along the way that inbreeding creates real problems for people. But there are cultures and there are huge groups of people all over the world who really believe that all of that is an imposition and that we're being very, very unkind. And it's just not. The word they always use is fair, F-A-I-R. It's always unfair that all these people are doing this. So in New York City, one of the most amazing places in the world, I know you've been there, I've been there, I fucking love that place. But how can the people in New York City be so stupid as to be voting for democratic socialists that will tear the place apart? It's almost as if you're signing your own death warrant. And clearly, this is what idiot New Yorkers want, so they must reap what they sow.
Mm. Yeah, Gareth, look, we can go on about this forever and ever. I just think that the sister marriage analogy kind of works because in your mind it's easy and it's fair because you don't have to leave the house. You've known her for all these years. It's productive because you care. Your heart's in the right place, but it's wrong. It's fundamentally wrong for humans to do this. So, yeah. Think twice before wanting to marry your sister.
Let's leave it there and go over the Atlantic to Britain, because they haven't got a new prime minister yet, but they're about to get one. Have you seen this story? Larry the cat at 10 Downing Street has witnessed 6 prime ministers, and we'll see his 7th prime minister. So obviously the cat lives at Downing Street and doesn't really give a shit who the owners are or the inhabitants are. But I think this is quite something.
Well, I mean, 2 away from the perpetual 9 lives that make cats so great. Yeah. I think ultimately cats, again, we're going back to things that are superior. Cats have proven this from the beginning. From Egyptian times, they've been integral to all of these things. And their reputation is pretty sound. You know, there's no Democrat socialist cats. Cats want to eat, they'll go put some work in. Cats want to eat easier, they put some work in value. They add value to a household. Luna does fuck all for productivity, but she creates a lot for morale around here. So therefore, she gets free food. She's much loved. And she's part of the team, you know. But she worked it out. She worked it out that there's value to add here.
I couldn't agree more. And you mentioned incest, but look at this. This is amazing. So Bill Wyman from the Rolling Stones in 1989 at the age of 52 married an 18-year-old girl called Mandy Smith. Then his son, Stephen, who was 30 at the time, later married Mandy's mother.
Wow.
So the dad married the daughter, then the son married the mom of the dad's new wife. So obviously the son was from a different... It's not really incestuous, but if Bill and Mandy stayed married, Stephen would have been his dad's father-in-law and his own step-grandfather-in-law.
I mean, that just makes for fun Christmases, right? Good on those.
Get your head around that. I mean, unless you call him Stephen, it's going to get very confusing very quickly, right?
That is... Wow, 52-18, hey? That's...
Yeah, that's a big age gap. That's a big age. But you can do that if you're a rock star.
Well, of course, yeah, because again, it goes back to value. The man has value. He's not marching towards, I need more girlfriends. He's throwing it out there.
Yeah. And I don't know. I've always thought that I should shut up about age differences because maybe I'll be one of those guys who gets married late in life. And then people go, oh, it's disgusting. He's got a young wife. So I'm just going to shut up about it. But I know a couple of people who did get married in their 40s and two, in fact, who got married in their 50s, they're all still married and happily so. It seems that their strike rate is much better than the strike rate of some of the people I know who got married in their 20s. And I don't know about you, Ben, but I go to birthday parties occasionally. I go to one or two weddings. I went to one a month ago, which was lots of fun. But a lot of the time now, I'm increasingly getting messages from people who are getting divorced.
So, yeah, it's a reality here. And for those guys who get married later on in life, maybe it's just their time. People are so quick to judge, hey? Maybe it was just they weren't ready. They didn't have the skills. They didn't have the things that needed to be in place. And maybe they're actually being considerate to society by, you know, waiting their turn. So people who are so quick to jump on this whole thing, like, oh, look at these men, they go for younger women. Like, yeah, well, maybe there's just, again, things make more sense at different stages of life. People are so quick to judge here without walking the 1,000 steps in their shoes, as Deepak Chopra used to say.
I don't know. I was horrified. On Friday last week, we had Nina Hasty and Leanne on, and both of them, they were both hilarious. I believe I was very interrupty with Leanne. I had feedback from a couple of people who said, Jesus, you didn't even give Leanne a chance. But, you know, she's got to stand up for herself. And some days she doesn't give me a chance. So I don't feel bad about that. But I told them both something that I thought was quite a revelation. And both of them went, yeah, obviously. I said, you guys know, right? You two girls and all girls know that guys don't actually care what your job is, right? Guys are never interested in like what a woman does for a living. And they were both,
really.
I thought they'd be shocked by that. And they went, no, obviously.
Yeah. So to kind of phrase it slightly differently, Gareth, guys don't really care, not because they don't care, it's because they don't value women on the answer of that question. So we don't categorize women and we don't put them in a certain box. We generally speaking, again, I mean, I don't really have a lot of guy friends that I spend every single day with. So I don't know what the consensus is. But when we talk to women, we want to hear about enthusiasm, passion, something that really creates excitement in their life. So if that is being a horticulturist or a air traffic controller, it's going to meet the same kind of response. Firstly, because it's not like we go, okay, so that means you make 1.7 million rand a year. So that's very important. None of us are saying that, or any guys with self-respect. We're not saying that. But no. guys care about positivity here. There's so much that just gets, that's a revelation people might not want to actually accept either. Guys don't want you moaning and bitching and just perpetuating shit that's happened in the past. Guys want to know that tomorrow is the chance of being tomorrow, as in like cool, happy.
Speaking of which, you and I are going to search for some post rugby happiness tomorrow. We're going to hit Pretoria, right?
Well, we're watching the game at The View, which I'm very excited about. So we're getting there around 4 o'clock. Kickoff's just after 5:40. Pretoria, hey, that's the place for this.
And I'm embarrassed because I'm glad you mentioned that now, because I had no idea what time should I be there? I mean, you know, I don't care about the rugby.
Yeah, let's have a couple of pre-game drinks at 4. We can watch the sunsets, you know, because we're at The View. We're at the crown jewel of Robbie Cruz's jawling empire tomorrow, which is really important for me to support our man Robbie.
My brother absolutely fucking hates Robbie's social media stuff, but he can't tear himself away from it. Because when I was at his house on Monday, he's like, look at this fucking idiot. He goes, look at this guy. What a fucking idiot. And I'm like, well, why are you watching it? He's like, I can't believe anyone would do this. I said to him, you're watching it. So,
I mean, obviously, you know, Robbie and I have a golf channel together. And last week we had our fifth match. It was against Paul Harris and our friend Inga Neft. And then this week coming now, we've got Victor Matfield and Louis Hudson, who's basically, he's a head of golf at Supersport. He's an absolute stalwart at Supersport, good friend of Victor's. And the two of those two give Robbie and I such shit, relentless shit. It's just a massive war of words. So I'm currently working on that edit, but it's absolute class because Robbie hardly talks. Mostly because he's so involved in his CBD vape, and we can't get a word in with these old oaks. It is absolute comedy gold. So you see Robbie talking every single day, and everyone's like going at his clips. But in this video, this game is so competitive, and these old oaks are just giving us so much cut. It's hilarious.
I love that you guys are doing this. You mentioned Inga. Now Inga is she looks fucking great, and I've known Inga for what, 20 years? She's a phenomenon.
Yeah, good at golf. I met Inga as well probably 25 years ago. No, 20 years ago.
I didn't know she played golf. Is she good?
So she's only been playing for a year. And this is another thing that we want to do with our channel is that we just want to get people to come out and enjoy golf for what it is. Because that's what you don't have to have played for 20 years or whatever. You can pick it up. You find your own level. And it's just so much fun here. It really is. Like, it's just... it's so cool in this place to play golf. I've been saying it for years. And just to see people like her, she exemplifies that.
Judas says something about what we were talking about just now. I personally believe the people who get married later in life tend to have a better chance of staying married, especially if both parties have lived through experiences and have learned from it. Yeah, as long as you don't carry a whole bunch of baggage, because the problem with people who are older, and I can say this with reference to myself and to a lot of my friends, the majority of my friends are my age, but you know, some people carry a whole lot of crap with them in life. They, you know, their bad experiences, their good experiences, their pain, their trauma, their sorrow, their bitterness. A lot of people carry that shit. And the older you are, the more bad habits and routine and structure ingrained in you, and you can be very selfish at that age. On the other hand, you've obviously got experience, you got a little bit of wisdom, you tend not to let the small stuff irritate you as much as it does when you're in your 20s. So yeah, there are swings and roundabouts here. I don't disagree.
Unfortunately, some people even take their parents' baggage and shit, and they're actually, they perpetuate that themselves. But another thing about getting married later is that sometimes if people have to make the choice to, you can actually work on stuff. Like, you can actually pre-season your life so much better. You don't just run into the field and go, okay, I'll have the coach picks me. You can actually really work on some skills. You can really work on some conditioning.
I'm going to have breakfast today with Aki Anastasiu, who's always fun to be around. Yeah, Aki's always funny. He's the one who, whenever I phone him or he phones me, even voice notes, and when we see each other in person, he goes, "How are you?" Like that, and then loud, and then everyone kind of looks around. So I know that's going to happen. I don't even know where we're going for breakfast, but wherever it is, people better watch out because he's going to do that loud.
So, Gareth, I keep dropping sporting metaphors and analogies. Can we just talk about sport a little bit? Because I know tomorrow is the Springboks, right? But tomorrow is the start. Tomorrow is the start of the Rugby Nations Championship, which means that for the next 3 Saturdays of our lives, we have the best rugby possible because all the best teams from the north are playing all the best teams in the south. So, literally, it's like having a World Cup of rugby for the next 3 weekends. I know the World Cup of football right now is the biggest thing in the whole world, and we're getting into the round of 16 now, which things get really, really interesting. But to have the rugby equivalent essentially happening at the same time is just such a bonanza. So tomorrow morning it starts with France versus New Zealand. Then we've got Ireland versus Australia. So those are the real big ones. And then obviously England are going to be here playing against us in South Africa. And then next week we're going to be at Loftus playing Scotland. Week after that, we're playing Wales. So we're in this amazing zone right now where, like, Wimbledon finals will be next weekend, right? So Wimbledon's currently now. We've got the British Grand Prix happening this weekend. We've got – it's always like this in July. So it goes like May, June, July, August, obviously, is Northern Hemisphere summer. So it is just the most charming, wonderful time for sport that you can go out with your mates, you can make plans. – Winter is never cuck in this country because we get exposed to so much. And now with this Nations Championship, every single weekend is high stakes as well because winning these games means you get to the final in November. So it's not like send out your worst team, although France never really care. But every one of these games means so much.
Somebody says in the comments, Bitcoin Butt says, Ben, did you see the ticket prices tumble?
Yeah, so that's a real big talking point right now. And I think it's setting some dodgy precedents within Bok Rugby. So we all joked about Ellis Park being a bit of a shithole. It's not exactly where you want to go play, to go watch rugby. A friend of mine recently put it very well. He said, "I'll only watch a test match at Ellis Park if you can helicopter me in and then helicopter me out when I want to leave, which might be 5 minutes after the game or an hour after the game." Those are my terms to watch Ellis Park. Now, to try and provide value, I will be the first to say I applaud all the efforts in trying to make the Ellis Park precinct more manageable, less dodgy. I told you a while ago, Oaks were getting shumboxed in the area for just loitering, which I applaud. And it is just one of those things that you can dress it up as much as you want. You're still asking Oaks to go to Hillbrow. That game is at 5:40, right? That game ends in the dark. You know what I'm talking about here. You don't want to be that.
Zombies.
You don't want to be there. You've got all these people who go, but you know, you got to make an effort and you got to be the change you see in this world. Some people don't want to be at Hillbrow on Saturday night, okay? There's a fundamental primal urge not to do that as a person.
I just think of Will Smith's movie, I Am Legend, because that is what happens in Hillbrow and in... What is that area around, like, Ellis Yeovil. Park, Standard Bank, or Yeovil? No, it's not Yeovil. It's something else. It's like Rosettenville or whatever, but it's... No, it's not. It's... Nando's have their head office there as well. What's it fucking called?
Selby.
It is shocking. No.
Selby?
It's something fucking awful. Anyway, if anybody knows, drop it in the comments. What a shithole.
So, yes, and what we're doing right now is obviously narrative building, okay? But it is shit.
Sorry, and someone says it's Bez Valley.
Bez Valley is a little bit further down towards the east. But, yeah, these are all places that you don't want to go on a Saturday, right? So Ellis Park is amazing. They've just signed a new sponsorship with 10 Bets. So they've got a new sponsor for the thing. It's great. It's a great stadium once you're there. It's a piece of rugby heritage in this country. It's our fortress. But yeah, those are shit areas. And the thing is, it's like we're playing the All Blacks there when the All Blacks come here for the greatest rivalry tour. So we've got people only can only budget for certain things in Gauteng, right? So I'm going to Loftus. So I'm paying however much I'm paying for my dad and I to go to Loftus. And that's what I'm budgeting for July. It's my big day out. And I just prefer Loftus. That's just what it comes down to. So Loftus will be a sellout and it'll be amazing. So they were literally, it was looking dodgy. Like they sold a third of the stadium this week to go watch the Springboks versus England. Now, this is one of the most highly anticipated matches in the sport right now. And we can only sell a third of the stadium. So what SA Rugby then had to do is they had to slash ticket prices. So a ticket that you would ordinarily have maybe spent 930 Rand on, you can now get it for 600 bucks. So people are now, people who spend full price are now incredibly pissed off for good reason. People who have been waiting, umming and ahhing, are now getting a bit of a deal. But now what is the safer future matches when the ticket prices go out? And people go, nah, let's just boycott until the week of the game, and then they'll slash the tickets. So now there's this new behavior that is going to come into it, unfortunately. These tickets are expensive. We've had this debate over and over about them being too expensive. SA Rugby has to prop up all the things that don't make money, like women's rugby and all those other things. So they have to make money along these lines. And unfortunately, this is how the cookie crumbles with that. Yes, they're probably taking the piss. And I know people get really upset about how they've taken leaps in the last 2 years. I get that. But it goes both ways. So it's tricky. I think the biggest problem with this current test match is that it shouldn't go to Ellis Park. Ellis Park's getting the New Zealand game. This game should be at Nelspruit. This game could have been at Kabeja. This game could have been in other places. It didn't have to be here, especially with Loftus the very next weekend. So all I'm saying is this is just horrific planning of geography. I don't think it's a ticket price issue. I think this is a fatigue for having too many games at this place. And it's not like we're unbeatable at this venue and we shit everywhere else. We are the Springboks. We can go play them in Grassy Park right now, barefoot. And I reckon we'll win. So let's not get too precious about Ellis Park as a spiritual home of SA Rugby. It's lovely, but you can't keep asking Gauteng rugby fans to keep stepping up to the plate and spending thousands on a day out. That's the issue.
Yeah, well, especially not at Ellis Park.
And also, if you're going to have Ellis Park game, let's maybe look towards the 3 o'clock.
Yeah, it can't be like, as soon as you go into the night hours, it's called New Doornfontein, according to Shani.
Yeah, Doornfontein, yeah.
That's terrible. Oh, my God. All right, then people want to know about the return of Connor and then Drikus the 19th. Is that worth talking about?
So we didn't talk about the UFC White House, did we?
No, you mentioned it briefly before, the week before it. Yeah. But no, we didn't.
I was like, no, guys, we can't use national monuments for sport in this kind of way. It's a bit cheap. Holy shit.
You were very down on it.
Holy shit. Was that probably the greatest sporting event that I've seen in quite some time? Gareth,
did you see that eagle that flew across crowd and then landed on that chick's arm?
It was goosebumps here. It was fucking phenomenal. Gareth, the fighters walked out of the Oval Office. They walked through the White House with like presidential guards, Navy guys, and then they got out into the lawn and then they just fought. And the fights were great. And the main fight was this American dude who was a 6-1 underdog beating the crap out of the Spanish Oak. And he won the title at the age of 37, Justin Gaethje, who's tried to win the title, I think, 3 times in front of Donald Trump on his birthday, beat the living shit out of this Oak, who's seen as like the pound-for-pound greatest in the sport. He beat him up so badly he had to quit because he couldn't see. His orbital sockets were broken. And then in the most American moment, he just does a backflip off the fucking cage and then just has this special UFC belt, which is the UFC 250 Freedom Belt. But it was the purest of pure theater, and it put the UFC back where people wanted it to be. But unfortunately, it's one event, and they can't do that again. It cost Dana White $60 million at least. But there was 80,000 people. So there were 4,000 invited people who watched on the lawn of the White House. There were 80,000 people next door in a field with big screens, and it was immense. It was incredible. It just shows that when the UFC does actually care about stuff, which isn't always – they can own it. Huh? Yeah, so Conor McGregor's been coming back for quite some time. He's been running his mouth off the whole time. I think it's one of the most delusional comebacks we've ever seen pitched. He spent a lot of time outside of the drug pool because he snapped his leg, but he was taking mm-hmm. drugs in that time. Not exactly a secret. And I think he was past his prime maybe 4 or 5 years ago. He just managed himself badly. This is what happens when you get people who are destined for manual labor in this world and you give them millions and millions of dollars. They don't make the best life choices. And he put a lot of sniff up his nose. He just didn't manage himself well. I mean, I'm not saying I would, because who knows what happens when life changes like that. But the sport's moved on. People have got better. And he still thinks that the Conor from 8 years ago is enough to do well in the sport right now. It's really, really not. So I can't see him doing well. I can't see him doing well in his comeback. But yeah, Dricus is fighting again, which is really great. He's taking on Kamaru Usman. Kamaru Usman technically he's incredible. He really is. He is a phenomenal wrestler, slightly smaller man than Dricus. So I think, you know, people say that, you know, when Khamzat handled Dricus the way he did, he big brothered him. Therefore, Dricus is going to struggle against someone like Kamaru Usman, who wasn't as troubled by Khamzat Chimaev. I just think that where Kamaru is in his career, what Dricus brings on the feet and what Dricus brings in all-out chaos and intensity, I don't think he can really match it. I think it's going to be very difficult. I think that he can really trouble Dricus, but ultimately Dricus gets this one done. So it's not one of the main number events. It is a different sort of event that this is headlining. Dricus left yesterday. Yeah, it's cool. Hey, again, this is the time of year when we're going to be enjoying this kind of stuff. Big events, massive events.
Well, I see Chase in the comments says he's going to watch Dricus in Oklahoma City. So that's pretty cool. Oh, like I think this must be a hell of a time to be in the US. I mean, there's so much going on with the 250th birthday, with the World Cup, with this perfect weather. And by the way, Hermin says something here, which I didn't even realize because I didn't watch it live. You did. The UFC fight at the White House. It was fucking insane, she says. The left wished the event was rained out. Instead, they got a rainbow on the horizon when the event began, and the rain moved around the White House. Once in a lifetime.
Yeah, well, look, some people will say that it's divine intervention. Some people will say that it's a weather anomaly. But yeah, Gareth, it was destined to be like heavily rained out, heavily. And it just went like this around the White House, the storm.
Jesus.
That's because God's not a lefty. We this is obvious.
Yeah, otherwise he would have made us all the same.
Exactly. And annoying robots. And hateful. Yeah, and everything hateful, about that, yeah. Everything about that UFC White House event just reminded you that people like that kind of stuff, hey. It's meant to happen. It's cool. It's different. It's freedom. This is what it is, you know? People love going to America because of what America is. People aren't going there because of the Democrats, socialists. Fuck that. They're going there because you can drink beer and watch Oaks fight and do fun shit.
Bitcoin Butt says that that same American you were talking about who won his fight said Michelle Obama is a man right at the end.
That was a different American. So that guy who said Michelle Obama is a man, he's more of like a wrestling character. He's an ex-NFL player who got into the sport. And the heavyweight division is so thin on talent. So his whole thing is I'm going to knock Oaks out and say dumb shit, because he's not like that. He's not when the cameras are off, he's actually quite a cool, chilled Oak. But his whole thing is that he says all those different things, and that's what gets him attention.
Do you play as much golf when it's cold like this? Because I'm thinking about the rest of your weekend and what you would usually do.
Gareth, I make golf content. I don't play golf. I play so little golf, unfortunately. I play so few rounds. But in winter, no, fuck, it's too cold. It's just too cold in the hands. It's too cold in the back.
It doesn't look nice, you know? I mean, part of the reason that golf, you've said so I'm not making this up, but part of the reason that golf is appealing to people is you get out into the sun and their beautiful trees and, you know, these awesome lawns that just look perfectly tended to, and you know, you get to have fun with your friends out there. And I don't think that's the case when it's shit and cold and brown.
No, it's not. I played last Saturday morning and it was tough. Like, it takes me 4 or 5 holes to get going. I shot 47 37 because the first 2 hours was just awkward. Look, I love playing in winter because the ball bounces a lot. So you get to use the ground more. You get to do a lot more. You could play different sort of shots. But yesterday I actually did something very interesting with my friend Leroy at Royal Johannesburg. I did a TPI assessment. So basically you assess your body to find out where your inequalities lie, where your weaknesses lie. And then basically you work on that. So your swing becomes like complete. And I'm in decent shape. I got decent mobility. I scored so terribly on this test. So I'm using this winter. So I had a body handicap of 28. So as you know, in golf, you need lowest score. 28 is not good. I have major upper body restrictions and tightness. So I'm actually spending this winter to go through and properly do this, to really like craft my body into a place that I can swing in multiple planes with more freedom. So going to Mauritius in September. So I'm putting a lot of work in so that when I get to Mauritius, I'm going to be this new golf machine.
I don't know what those numbers mean, but I'm surprised, because if your numbers are like that, then everybody else, I mean, I know I'd be fucked.
Well, so it's what I love about this and what I find so humbling about it is that it's not the most average, not the most obvious kind of stuff, you know? So like your shoulder mobility, for example, the way that your thoracic spine rotates, hip mobility, hip flexors, ankle mobility, all of these things get assessed, because there's no point going to a golf coach and the guy's like, you need to get your hands here, you need to be here. It's like, well, if I have such stiffness in my body and I can't get there, this lesson's stupid, because you're basically asking me to speak French when I've I can't. So you might even find like a real chunky monkey gets on the golf course and you go, oh, look at this, like he's going to be shit. But he might have the most delightful hip flexors. He might have the most incredible shoulder mobility. Obviously, terrible self-control when it comes to the buffet. But he might have the ability to rotate his thoracic spine like no one else. And this is another beautiful thing about golf, is that you can be good at it by being mobile and working in certain planes. And this is why it's endlessly fascinating for me.
Well, you see, we may not all be equal, Ben, but some of us have better hip flexors than others. So that's a good enough reason to be optimistic about the world, right?
Exactly. It really is. And to never give up.